From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Ed Morin, and for Tuesday, June 18th, this is Maine Things Considered. The State Senate votes to impose limits on the use of drones by Maine law enforcement. The Maine House has offered some hope to those who want more say in whether wind projects are allowed in their communities. And UMaine gets low scores in a first-of-its-kind study of teacher preparation programs. The newly released Teacher Prep Review gives very few high marks to any of the 1,400 schools included in the nationwide evaluation. Those stories are coming up, but first, this news. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Ed Morin. The University of Maine system got low rankings from a first-of-its-kind study that evaluates teacher preparation. Nearly all 7 UMaine campuses received 1 star or less for their undergraduate education programs. Maine is not alone in its bottom-level ratings, but some university officials question the review's criteria. Patty White reports.
How's this for a scathing critique of U.S. education programs? The newly released Teacher Prep Review calls it an industry of mediocrity. Out of 1,400 institutions evaluated by the National Council on Teacher Quality, which published the report, just 4 received a full 4-star ranking. Managing Director of Teacher Preparation Studies Arthur McKee says the education training field is in disarray.
And most programs are getting 2 or fewer stars.
Including Maine's. Most of the state's university campuses received less than 1 star for their undergraduate education programs. Just a handful eked out an overall single-star rating, like the Orono campus for its elementary education program and Fort Kent and Presque Isle for their secondary education programs. The University of Southern Maine shines a little brighter at 2.5 stars. McKee says the rankings for elementary education programs are most troubling.
We don't see a single program in Maine that is doing a good job in teaching reading.
McKee says there are bright spots in some Maine teacher training programs, but overall they do a poor job teaching the fundamentals of classroom management, he says, and need to be more selective when admitting education students. To create its rankings, the study evaluated course requirements, syllabuses, and admission standards. It took 8 years and 10 pilot studies to hone the methodology. But Maine education officials are not convinced the review gives an accurate picture of their programs.
You know, to make these judgments without ever a campus visit or to understand what's really happening day to day and what the faculty work, that's leaving a gap in the report, I think.
Kathy Filona is Associate Dean of USM School of Education. She says the review completely ignores the school's strengths.
Our programs are predominantly at the graduate level, and yet the focus of our report was undergraduate teacher education. So I was somewhat surprised that they didn't identify or report on our largest program and the one that we're best known for.
As for raising admission standards, Filona says USM has already identified that need and raised the bar. The dean of the University of Maine's College of Education, William Nichols, says his school is doing the same, but he thinks there's a larger cultural shift that needs to happen to attract top students to teaching.
Probably our top students are going into programs like engineering and NSFA and business. Education, there's not going to be a whole lot of monetary reward for pursuing what I would consider the most noble of careers.
Nichols says some top-tier students may be turned off to teaching because the profession is under the microscope and tends to be undervalued. He thinks the review's methodology only gives a partial picture of the University of Maine education program and points out that the school undergoes a rigorous accreditation process every 2 years where it's evaluated on-site. But he says he appreciates the feedback.
Like most things, we could always be better, and we always are striving to improve.
Arthur McKee from the National Council on Teacher Quality says the hope is that the review will tap into the power of the market to inspire change when aspiring teachers make choices about where to pursue their education. He says there's a reason his organization is targeting teacher training for improvement. The report says the typical first-year teaching experience is akin to fraternity hazing.
It's not just that teacher preparation is a good lever because it's at the beginning, but it's also because an ever higher percentage of students are being taught by first-year teachers. So we conservatively estimate that about 1.5 million students every year get a first-year teacher.
At the Maine Department of Education, spokesperson Samantha Warren says the department is committed to ensuring that teacher education programs are as rigorous as possible. She says the department is continually working with higher education institutions to strengthen their programs. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
The main house is given residents of the unorganized territories who live in an area designated for expedited wind permitting hope they might be able to opt out. It's a right many say was taken away from them 5 years ago when the legislature approved the expedited wind permitting area without any public input. Ever since then, residents of five communities have been trying to have their say in the process. And as Susan Sharon reports, they've even gotten the sympathy of lawmakers who say they now regret the 2008 vote.
It may have the word wind in its title, but a bill to amend the expedited permitting area for wind energy development in the unorganized territories is not about wind power, says Republican Representative Larry Dunphy of Emden. It's about rights.
This is about people's rights. People's rights that were removed by this body in 2008. People who have no way to get out of these expedited areas. There's a method to get them in. There's a method to utilize the mountaintops. But there is absolutely no way to be removed from this, from these expedited areas.
During a sometimes emotional debate on the floor Monday night, Dunphy said the right to have a say in how or if wind power is sited in their communities was taken away with a minimum amount of debate in the House and Senate and with no input from the communities affected. He calls that a horrible violation that should be corrected. Most members of the legislature's Energy, Utilities, and Technology Committee agree. Among the minority holdouts, however, is Democratic representative and co-chair of the committee, Barry Hobbins of Saco.
This is just a fancy way of repackaging what is really a moratorium on the wind industry for certain areas of the state.
And Hobbins says creating a process to allow certain communities to opt out of expedited wind permitting would send a damaging business signal to investors about whether Maine is truly open for business. That's because the bill allows for an 18-month moratorium on wind development if a single petitioner gets a majority of voters to sign a petition in 60 days. Hobbins points out that the wind industry has invested more than $1 billion in Maine over the past decade and has created and retained an average of 240 jobs each year. Hobbins says the communities of Lexington, Concord, and Carrying Place Townships and Highland and Pleasant Ridge Plantations should have the right to opt out if they choose. But Hobbins supports more onerous criteria for opting out than the majority members of his committee, including the requirement that, quote, any petition for removal must demonstrate issues or concerns that cannot be addressed unless an area is removed.
This is a local control issue. If you are so in favor of this legislation, brothers and sisters, put a 480-foot windmill in your backyard and see how long you last.
Democratic Representative Brian Jones of Freedom says the residents who have those windmills in their communities should have the right to say whether they want them or not. At least two lawmakers who supported legislation creating the expedited wind permitting area in 2008 say they now regret the action. And Democratic Representatives Terry Hayes of Buckfield and Cheryl Briggs of Mexico apologized for leaving residents of the five communities without a voice in the process. Briggs says she has to look at wind towers every day of her life now.
I really feel that it's important that we slow this process down and we let all the people's voices be heard and give them the respect that it is so deserved.
A majority of the Maine House agreed. The bill has now been sent to the Senate, where its fate is uncertain. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Still to come, a divisive debate over the use of drones by Maine law enforcement and a rush to approve more than $100 million in bonds. But first, this other Maine news. A Maine hospital group has gone to court to stop a proposed new health insurance plan being crafted by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield and Maine Health, parent company of Maine Medical Center, until it can get more information about it. The state has said that Anthem can keep details of the plan secret as it seeks approval from the Maine Bureau of Insurance. But Chuck Gill of Lewiston-based Central Maine Healthcare says a suit filed last week in Kennebec County Superior Court asked that the confidential Anthem documents be made public in advance of the upcoming hearing on the plan.
So for us, serving large swaths of central and western Maine and some community, we're the only provider, to be excluded from the network just doesn't make any sense, unless it makes sense to have Maine Health, the largest provider in Maine, to call the shots for everybody, and we think that's wrong.
Anthem had no comment on the suit, but says it will comply with an order from the Superintendent of Insurance to release the names of providers in the proposed network. The public hearing is scheduled for July 28th. The legislature's Assistant Senate Republican leader, who helped craft a Medicaid expansion compromise, says he is hopeful lawmakers can muster enough votes to override Republican Governor Paula Page's veto. Roger Cates of Augusta says he's disappointed with the veto, which came last night. Cates authored an amendment to cut off Maine's participation in the expansion after 3 years, designed to ease Republican concerns about the potential cost on the state when the federal government begins to lower its share. Maine lawmakers have sustained a veto by Republican Governor LePage on a bill designed to lower long-term care insurance costs. The bill would have directed the state to study issues related to long-term care insurance, including ways to prevent unfair discrimination based on gender. The measure was sponsored by Democratic Representative Sharon Treat of Hollowell.
We currently have an unsustainable business model in the long-term care insurance market. Insurance carriers are now charging women 40 to 50% more for a product that is already very expensive and basically unaffordable to many.
In his veto letter, the governor says he opposes unfunded mandates that create a significant drain on valuable state resources. Treat disputes that an unfunded mandate would have been created. Legislation designed to increase safety and accessibility for bicyclists has gone into law without Governor LePage's signature. Among its provisions, cyclists will have the legal right to determine the safest part of a roadway on which to ride. The bill also makes it illegal for cars to make turns in front of bicycles and would make a bicycle collision with a passing car evidence that the car has violated the state's 3-foot law. The Maine legislature has approved legislation that would create a program to recycle leftover household paint. Paint would be collected at participating retail stores and transfer stations across the state, with responsibility for the program falling to manufacturers, with a recycling fee added to the price of a product to finance the effort. And a lot of good quality strawberries. That's the assessment of agriculture experts about Maine's strawberry season, which is just getting underway. David Handley with UMaine Cooperative Extension says some fields in southern Maine are open for limited pick-your-own, and he expects growers in much of the middle of the state to open for pick-your-own this weekend. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Ed Morin. The state Senate has voted to impose a 2-year moratorium on allowing Maine police agencies to use surveillance drones. Lawmakers also decided to require that police obtain a warrant to use drones to spy on suspects. A.J. Higgins has more.
State Senator Linda Valentino attempted to find some common ground in the increasingly divisive debate over the use of aerial drones by police agencies. But the Saco Democrat says that goal has been complicated by the flurry of interest in the small flying devices.
Everybody wants drones. Real estate brokers, photographers, surveyors, everybody wanted the drones. We need to slow this process down.
For nearly an hour Monday night, Valentino urged the 35 members of the Senate to back a proposed 1-year moratorium on police drone surveillance. Valentino supported an approach which had majority support in committee that would place the police use of the devices on hold for 12 months while a state Criminal Justice Academy panel could review protocols.
We are placing a moratorium on the use for law enforcement so that they will not be snooping into people's lives. They will not do that, so therefore they do not need a search warrant because they're not supposed to be doing it.
That same position was favored by Maine Attorney General Janet Mills to address arguments raised by the Maine Civil Liberties Union, a group that pushed for language requiring police agencies to obtain a court-issued warrant before being permitted to deploy a drone to spy on a suspect. Among those who supported the warrant language was State Senator John Patrick, a Rumford Democrat, and Republican Assistant Senate Minority Leader Roger Cates. Rather than a division based on party lines, the issue split legislators into two camps: those who thought the legislature should take the lead on the warrant issue, and those who wanted to let the Criminal Justice Academy work out the details of drone use. Kate says lawmakers have already agreed that a warrant is needed for government entities to track a person's location through their cell phones. And says Kate's, a judge's order is needed when the state wants to obtain a person's medical history.
Here we're dealing with a fourth in this series of bills, which at least to this senator, is the most intrusive of all, being literally spied upon from above by a drone, which may be a large airplane-like thing that we can easily see, but it may be as small as an insect.
In a 21-14 vote, the Senate opted to go beyond the one-year moratorium and begin deliberating the warrant issue. Senator David Burns, a retired state trooper, warned his seatmates that they would be better off heeding the advice of the Attorney General than following the lead of special interest groups like the ACLU of Maine. Burns said there are some who would like to see the efforts of Maine law enforcement agencies complicated by the warrant requirement.
That would have us completely tie our hands behind our back. That would suit them just fine.
Ultimately, the Senate approved the warrant requirement 23-12. It also expanded the moratorium period on when police could obtain a warrant for drones from 1 to 2 years. The bill faces further votes in the House and Senate. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Maine needs to issue more than $100 million in voter-approved bonds quickly if it hopes to get favorable interest rates and head off any damage a budget stalemate could inflict on the state's credit profile. Governor Paula Page says he's ready to approve the bonds now that Medicaid debt to hospitals is being repaid. LePage says he asked State Treasurer Neria Douglas to prepare the bonds weeks ago and hasn't gotten any response. But Douglas, who was appointed as treasurer by majority Democrats last year, says it's the LePage administration that first needs to tell her which transportation and infrastructure projects they're greenlighting and how much they cost before she can go ahead and issue the bonds to pay for them. Jay Field reports.
Neria Douglas follows a very simple philosophy when issuing bonds.
Bottom line is we don't borrow money until we need it. It costs money to borrow money.
Now that the hospital debt is out of the way, Douglas says the state has a financial incentive to issue long-delayed bonds as quickly as possible. Interest rates are rising. So late last week, Douglas reached out to the LePage administration. She asked top officials at several state departments, including transportation, what projects were top priorities and shovel-ready.
The status is we're waiting for the governor and the branches that will utilize these funds to tell us what, how much they need and when.
But when LePage signed the hospital repayment bill last Friday, his office put out a press release suggesting it was Douglas's job to get the ball rolling. LePage noted that he'd asked the treasurer to expedite preparation of the bonds in late May and hadn't heard anything from her office. LePage's spokesperson, Adrian Bennett, declined to be interviewed on tape for this story, but she says the administration is working to establish which projects are priorities, which still need funding, and what the next step should be. In some cases, Bennett says bonds may not need to go out right away.
A day or week from now probably wouldn't matter as much as the fact that we need to get them out there.
Dana Connors heads the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, a strong supporter of the more than $100 million in bonds approved by voters in 2010 and 2012. Connors says there's really no other way to finance the kind of improvements to roads, bridges, and other infrastructure that the state needs to make on a consistent basis.
They do need to be controlled, but I think the case to be made in Maine is that we are conservative. We're conservative in terms of the length of time that we amortize, that we, by practice, consistently have retired more than we issue in bond debt, that the market is very attractive.
How attractive, though, at least in the short term, may depend on how quickly the governor and the democratically controlled legislature can reach a deal on a new state budget. In an interview Monday with the Portland Press-Herald, Solomon Millett, LePage's finance chief, said the state must first enact a new budget before it can authorize the voter-approved bonds. But Treasurer Neera Douglas says a prolonged budget impasse between LePage and the Democrats could hurt the state's standing with the ratings agencies.
That creates a credit negative or a negative atmosphere for selling the bonds. We could still sell them, but we'll take a hit.
And it's not only the voter-approved bonds that would suffer. Maine would also be forced to accept less than favorable terms as it sells revenue bonds to pay off all that Medicaid debt owed to hospitals. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
Hey, it's about 5 before 6. Time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Janis.
Thanks, Ed. High pressure is ridging in from the west for the overnight hours, and eventually any kind of shower activity will taper off. We'll have clearing skies throughout the day tomorrow, and it looks like fine weather will be in store for the rest of the work week. My forecast for tonight is for any rain showers over southern Maine to clear out, and we'll have clearing skies from west to east over much of the state. We'll have lows at 35 to 40 for the far north, 40 to 50 degrees for central and southern Maine. Plenty of sunshine on the way for tomorrow. It'll be very dry and nice. We'll have highs at 70 to 75 from Presque Isle to Portland. Mainly clear tomorrow night, lows at 45 to 50 degrees. It'll be mostly sunny on Thursday with highs in the 70s. On Friday, mostly sunny, slightly milder, and more humid, highs at 75 to 80 statewide. For the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm meteorologist Paul Janis.
And that's Maine Things Considered for this Tuesday. We had production help from Keith Shortall and Barbara Caritti. I'm Ed Morin. Thanks for listening.